This is the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 179. I am your host, Adam Mangum. First up, Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune joins us to talk about spring football and some of the storylines coming out of camp, including concerns in the defensive backfield. We also talk about what we are learning and not learning about the team this spring. Next up, Matt and I talk about Kentucky and their quest for perfection. We also preview the men's volleyball important series coming up this weekend. We dive into spring football and what it will take for BYU to get to 10 wins next season. We also get really optimistic about a loaded men's basketball roster. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And of course, listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the Rise and Shout Podcast, our frequent guest and friend, Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune. Jay, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks. Good to be back on with you, Adam.
So you and I had, this is, you know, I'm about 4.5 years in, and you were one of our first guests. And I think almost every single time we've had you on and talked about football, we've ended up talking about the defensive backfield. And so I'll start there with spring football coming. Last year, both of us felt pretty good about that group. Almost all of that group has now moved on with a lot of replacements. So let's talk about that group first. Defensive backfield, do we have reason to be nervous? Or do you think this, though young and inexperienced, this group maybe has potential to be better than what we might think today?
I think there's a lot of reason to be nervous, to tell you the truth. Losing Craig Bales is going to hurt. Losing Rob Daniel is going to hurt. They're basically replacing two key defenders. Jordan Johnson, of course, was hurt midway through the season and lost for the season. They're gonna struggle, I think. They did get a kid at Snow College, Derek Takanaka, to play safety. He's looked really good spring practices, and all the coaches have raved about him. So that's kind of halfway there, but there's still questions. Kai Nakua, of course, is probably the other starting safety. There's questions about how many games he will maybe have to miss because of his role in the brawl after the bowl game. So there's that. Then at corner, you're probably looking at Michael Davis and Jordan Prater. Jordan Prater is not participating in spring ball. I don't know why. I don't think it's academic related. There's that. Michael Davis, of course, is a converted receiver. Showed flashes of pretty good play last year at times. At other times, he looked, to be frank, he looked clueless out there at times. So, yeah, to answer your question, I think there's a lot of reason to be concerned. And Bronco kind of mentioned that today when he was asked what his biggest concern with the defense was. He said, you know, the secondary. He said, I'm pretty comfortable with the front seven, but the secondary is, not there yet and needs a lot of work. So it seems like that's kind of the same old story at BYU, the secondary issues. But I think they're real this year. I really think they're going to have to get some guys really make leaps and bounds. And by that, I mean probably Jordan Prater and Michael Davis.
Yeah. Well, let's keep on that side of the ball. Last year, there was very inconsistent play among the linebackers, some of it due to injuries, some of it due to inexperience, some of it due to maybe the scheme. This year, of course, Bronco's taken the offense back over, and defense back over, and he's had great success with that interior seven when he's been in charge. Do you think the talent is there for that linebacker core to put last year behind them, or do you think there's some cracks with those linebackers that Bronco and company are still concerned about?
I definitely think the talent is there. I do think there's probably not going to be another Kyle Van Noy among them. Alani Fua is gone, and he was pretty close in some respects to Kyle Van Noy. But I think they've got talent there. I think Fred Warner is going to be a star. He's not participating in spring camp because of injury. I think Kyler Beck is an up-and-coming player that's going to be good. On the inside linebackers, they've got – oh, and I should have mentioned Sione Taki-Taki, if he can kind of keep his head on straight, has the potential to be really, really good. And we saw last year in a few games, like I think it was Central Florida, where he really played well, and then other games he was basically suspended because he forgot to go to practice. So,
right.
But he's a rising star. I think he's got the potential to be inside. It's kind of strange at spring practice because basically the three inside linebackers who should play the most, Manoa Pakula, Harvey Longhi, and Teu Kautai, all three of them are missing, are basically out of spring practice. So you're seeing Jeremiah Leuta Doyer and Austin Heater are the two, you know, main line inside linebackers, and I don't think either of them will be on the field that much. Maybe JLD will be, but I don't think Austin Heater will be on the field that much if those other three guys that I mentioned come back in the fall. So, but if they do come back and all that, I think they're fine at that position. The outside linebacker, like we said, I think there's some talent there with Taki-Taki and Warner and Tyler Beck. I think Bronco will coach him up well and have him in the right spots this year. And so, like Bronco said, I think the front seven is going to be fine. But yeah. That secondary, big question mark.
Yeah, big question marks. Flipping to the other side of the ball, Mitch Matthews, including some things that you quoted him yesterday in the Tribune and in other places where I've heard him speak or read interviews, he seems pretty confident in the offense. Seems he even referenced 2009 and, you know, the team that year and what he saw as a young guy. How much can we learn about the offense in spring when a guy that's basically graduated and leaving, at least on the when the action is going 11-on-11, is not the quarterback we're going to have come fall? Do you think we can really learn that much about some of these other guys, or do you think it's kind of hard to tell what this offense will really look like come fall?
Yeah, I think it's hard to tell. Not only do you have what you said, that Christian Stewart throwing the passes, who won't be there this fall, but you also have a defense that they're going against that is not even close to full strength. So Friday night there's going to be a scrimmage, and half of the guys at least that will be playing in the fall won't be playing in the scrimmage on either side of the ball. So spring is really, really hard to tell. But I'll say this, in the 7 or 8 years that I've covered this team, I don't think they've had as many offensive weapons as this team has. If they can put it together. I mean, you just look at that receiving core with Nick Kurtz and Devon Blackman, and of course you mentioned Mitch Matthews and Mitchell Juergens and Trey Dye. They've just got weapons all over the field. Then you get to the running backs if Jamal Williams comes back healthy, and Algie Brown, who's looked really good in camp, Nate Carter. You don't hear a lot about Nate Carter, but man, in practice, he just tears it up. He really looks good in practice, and then he doesn't get a lot of opportunities in games. But yeah, it's hard to tell, you know, how good these guys are going to be. But if Taysom Hill stays healthy, and I think I wrote this the other day, and these guys stay healthy, this offense could be as good as we've seen in the last, you know, 10 years at BYU. I really think it has that potential.
Yeah, yeah. Now let's talk a little bit about Kurtz. It seems like reports out of camp is he is playing quite well. Of course, we did not get to see hardly any of him. I think you can count the number of snaps he played on one or two hands last year. Is this a special kind of wide receiver that you think people are going to remember for a long time, or is this really still Matthews is going to get the the bulk of the catches this year, and though talented, the rest of the group is going to probably split them up.
Yeah, I think so. I think Matthews is definitely going to be the go-to guy. I think Nick Kurtz will, you know, catch, you know, 35, 40 passes, I would say. But Matthews is going to get the bulk of the, you know, of the balls. Then they're really throwing a lot to the tight end this year in camp. Now, I'm not ready to say the tight end's back in the offense because under Robert and I don't know if the tight end will ever come back. But Brian Sampson is the name of tight end, and he is getting a lot of work in camp, and he's looking pretty good. Then they got a really tall kid by the name of Colby Jorgensen, who, I mean, he looks almost like a giraffe out there, but the kid's got some skills. He looks a little awkward. He's almost like a taller Mitch Matthews, if you can imagine that. But he's got a great pair of hands, and he's made some big plays. So what I'm saying is I think they'll spread the ball around a lot more than they even did last year, where Jordan Leslie and Mitch Matthews got a lot, most of the catches. I think you're going to see up to 10 guys, you know, get, you know, over 10 catches each.
Yeah. Spreading it all around. That you mentioned Taysom Hill, and I'll also throw in there Jamal Williams. Obviously, I say this without much hesitancy, that the best two offensive players coming back for the Cougars is, I mean, Taysom looks online and maybe even ahead of where people thought he would be physically. What about Jamal? I mean, is this something to be worried about, or it's just, well, there's no reason to risk anything and he's not quite ready in camp, but we'll see him full speed come fall camp?
Yeah, that's a good question. We haven't seen a lot of Jamal. I haven't even seen him at practices that much. I saw him in the first practice, and I honestly don't think I've seen him out there since. I think there's real reason to be concerned with a knee injury to a running back. Those are very, very hard to come back from for anybody, but especially for running backs. But we'll see, but they definitely will need him. They don't have a lot of depth at running back. They've got Algie Brown, who's great, and I mentioned Nate Carter. It's too bad that this Squally Canada, who's in camp and in practice, is ineligible this year because of the transfer rules. Because if Jamal can't go, they would really, really need another back of his caliber, of Squally Canada's caliber. But everything we've heard from the trainers, from Jamal himself, is that he'll be back, and so we'll just have to kind of wait and see on that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the other things that's come up, a theme, at least you've written about it, I've read it with others, and the players are saying it, Mitch Matthews included, is about leadership and maybe some more leadership in this spring ball than there had been in the previous year, and maybe some guys stepping up on both sides of the ball to lead. For me as a fan, it's really hard to know if that's smoke or if that's fire. Do you feel like there's something different this year than last spring, or do you think that's just kind of the things that guys say because, you know, it just makes it sound better if, you know, you've got a little bit more fire than you had last year?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of the thing players say. You know, I do think that having Taysom Hill just in the locker room, having him around, he's a natural leader. And so I think it's true in that sense. I think if you went back and looked at players before the start of last season, we're talking about the leadership and all that. And then it kind of disappeared when Taysom got hurt. And even the players themselves, when they started losing and had that rough losing stretch, they all kind of started admitting that, hey, our leadership isn't very good and guys are going sideways on us and things like that. And so, yeah, I just think it's something that almost every team says, and until they, you know, walk the walk and show us on the field how they can recover from setbacks and sudden change and things like that, then I think I'll just kind of wait and see before I, you know, jump on that bandwagon, so to speak.
Right. One of the other things that, of course, fans have been talking about anytime there's not games, and now that basketball season's done and football season's done, of course, all this heats up again is, you know, the Power Five conferences, conference expansion, and a little fuel to that fire was the SEC announcing that BYU and Army, as independents, would count in their scheduling as P5 out-of-conference opponents. Is this something that you think concerns, I mean, we hear Tom Homo talk about it as if, you know, they are comfortable with independence, and obviously the schedules are quite good in the next few years. But Bronco has expressed some desire to be in a conference in some candid interviews, and some of the players have said things like that in the past. Do you think this is just going to be an ever-present distraction for the team, or do you think for most guys out there playing, it really doesn't matter that much whether they're in a conference or not?
I think it doesn't matter a heck of a lot. I think players like to play for all conference honors and that sort of thing, and you don't really have that as an independent. They like to play for a conference championship, but you know, most players will tell you, hey, every game's a big game for us. Every game's huge. When we step between those lines, we want to win, and, you know, and we treat every opponent the same. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just think it's not going to be a huge distraction. I think where it will help, I think it would help them in recruiting if they got into a conference, a P5 conference. I think that's the major reason, that and revenue, obviously, where you want to be into a conference. But as far as actual games themselves, you know, these, and especially at BYU where you get the more mature players and I really think they play hard no matter what and, you know, aren't distracted and all that sort of thing. But on the off-the-field things like recruiting and that, I think it's huge. I think it's really, really important for BYU. If they want to maintain the level of success they've had and maybe even surpass that, I think it's just paramount that they get into a conference.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans would agree with you there. Is there anything new on the bowl game for 2015? I know Tom Homo says that it's a done deal, or at least that's what he's hinted at, but we don't know where and when or what, which I guess isn't really that much different than most teams at this time of year. Is that something we know anything more about, or we're just going to have to wait till Homo and company make some sort of announcement later this year?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to wait. I think BYU know. I think it's 95% sure they know where they're going. I think they're waiting on the bowl. The bowl wants to announce it. My best guess is it's that bowl over in Hawaii that's played on Christmas Eve, I think it is. Maybe even Christmas Day now, the Hawaii Bowl or something to that effect. That's what I've heard. And if you look, they don't have on their website, they haven't basically announced who their conference agreements are with. So it seems like that would be where BYU would fit in. But like you said, Tom didn't want to announce anything last month when he sat down with us for a state of the program discussion. So
right.
That's kind of where it sits right now, but that's kind of where my best guess is.
And I'll get you out. One last question, Jay. Is there, tough schedule to start some great programs, though some of them maybe not as high as they have been in the past, but still there's a lot of, tough games there at the beginning. Is this something that you think, is this something that we're going to see going forward? Do you think this is going to be consistently maybe every other year or so schedules like this, assuming BYU stays independent? Or do you think this is kind of a one-year sensation where, unfortunately, most of these games fell on the road and we may not see a schedule like this again for some time?
No, I think you're going to see these tough schedules from here moving forward. Bronco actually mentioned that today. Somebody asked him to give kind of a state of the program paragraph, and he started mentioning the schedule and said, hey, if you think 15's good, wait till 16. If you think 16's good, wait till 17. I think the major issue will still be the November games, getting, some of the better quality opponents in November. I think in September, from now until they're no longer independent, BYU's September schedule is going to be about the best in the country because of other teams' availability. I think the crux of it is the November schedule, and if they can upgrade that, and they have this year, they're going to play Missouri in November this year, and in 16, they're going to play Utah State late in the schedule, Cincinnati in November. So it's getting better, but I think that's where it'll all come down to. If fans want a spectacular schedule from beginning to end, I think November's the month where they really want to see it upgraded.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jay, thanks for coming on. Of course, encourage everybody to follow your coverage of the rest of spring practice and then into the summer at the Salt Lake Tribune.
Okay. Thanks again for having me on.
Matt, it's podcast time.
Yes, it is. It's a special time.
Yes, a special time. 179 podcasts.
Woo!
To be precise.
What's that in dog podcasts? I don't even know.
It's like a billion.
Yeah.
It's like we've been doing this for like 100 years.
Roughly 1 billion.
So, Matt, to open up today, I've got two topics for you. Both college basketball related. Both worthy of discussion.
Excellent.
Worthy of discussion. The first one is, I watched a lot of basketball, like many of us. There were a few games on. It's a great time of the year, and every year I say I'm going to take those Thursday and Friday off, and then I don't, and I regret it.
Yep.
Because Thursday, I missed some of the best games of the tournament where I just got to see them on highlight. But Friday and Sunday, I was committed. All right? I was committed.
Attaboy.
One thing that has happened this year, and I believe I've ranted it on this podcast in the past, but came up on Twitter during some overtime and late heroic games where a important player on one of the teams was fouled out. Okay? Mm-hmm. So let's get back in our DeLorean and go back 100 years. All right? You ready for this?
Wow. All right. Dial it up.
James Naismith creates basketball. He hangs a peach basket. All right? Guys cannot dribble. They throw the ball to each other and then throw the ball into a peach basket. All right? And people don't tweet at me or email me about how this isn't historically accurate. Okay? I'm doing this for dramatic purposes. So they do all this, and five fouls out to get out of a game. Now, why do we hold that sacred? I think it's dumb. I think every time I watch a good game in which the best player or one of the best players on one team is fouled out, I feel like we're getting robbed of what the game should have actually been. Because some guy dressed as a zebra decided to call a ticky-tack foul early in the second half that was the third one, and all of a sudden, a few fouls later, the guy's out. What was passing on Twitter, Matt, and I'd love your reaction. I have a whole different recommendation, but what some folks were saying is once overtime starts, anybody that's fouled out should be able to come back, and they got one foul left, and everybody now goes up to six fouls instead of five. Matt, would you be pro or against such a proposal and rule change at the collegiate basketball level?
I could get behind that type of a rule change. But, you know, I and there are other sports where you can get in a fight and you just have to sit down for a couple minutes.
Yes, it's called hockey.
Right?
You can call it by name.
Lacrosse is like that. I mean,
you can have a, in football, you can hit the quarterback above the head. You get a 15-yard penalty, which is a big penalty. Don't get me wrong. But they don't throw you out of the game, even if you get two of those.
You could do it five times.
Yes, you could do it five times.
And they don't get to, like, kick an extra field goal or anything.
No, yeah, the coach would probably get pretty ticked at you.
And at some point.
And you're going to get fined, right? The NFL's going to fine you.
In the NFL, you will get fined. In the NCAA, you're an amateur, so you will not be fined.
You will not be fined. But you may get disciplined, right? The point is, somebody leaves a game because they hit a guy on the arm slightly five times. Now, when Naismith invented the game, it was a completely non-contact sport. That's what he had in mind. And early college basketball was very much a finesse game, not a contact game. would you call college or pro basketball a non-contact sport anymore?
Absolutely not. It is a contact sport.
Absolutely. It's very physical. And
and the fouls can be very subjective.
Yes. Yes, they can. I mean, obviously, there's sometimes where a foul's a foul, and it's easy, right? Some guy's going up for a layup, and you swipe for the ball and get him across the chest instead. You know, I mean, it's a foul. And only Tim Duncan would raise his shoulders and be upset that that was a foul. Sorry, Tim. I love you. But
I do feel like fouling out does put some type of control over what becomes the foul / three throw fest, which is the last 60 seconds of game clock.
No, it doesn't. They just
of all these games.
They just put in some guy to foul people because you've got fouls sitting on the bench. I hear what you're saying. I don't believe that that's – I don't know that that's actually true, right?
Now, I would just like to see that issue addressed. So if you foul a guy on purpose to stop the clock or send him to the line, it's a flagrant foul.
You intentionally
fouled that man.
I am with you. If you don't go for the ball, if you just wrap a guy from behind, even if it's not malicious, right? It's just I'm trying to stop the clock. You should have to go for the ball, right? If the guy is shooting and you don't go for the ball, it's flagrant, right? That's the definition of one of the definitions of a flagrant foul. If you look at a flagrant run, by definition, that happens all the time at the end of games. And they never call it. And I really wish, because that way, number one, I think it's better basketball, because I think sometimes these teams should be trying for a steal. And they get lazy and just foul the guy. The other thing I've heard proposed before, and I'm a proponent of this, is you have some type of penalty box where at foul five, you have to sit out 2, 3, 4 minutes of game time.
So does your team go like a man down during that time?
No,
or
go
you
a man
just,
down.
You have to sit in the box.
You are ineligible, right? The counter argument to that is, well, basically, you, to your point, you'd use some of these guys to just foul people and then know that I don't really care that he's in the box for
you have you'd have enforcers.
Yes. You know, so I understand that may not actually be the best solution to what I'm talking about. One of the other ones I've heard is once you get to 6 fouls, every time you foul somebody, it's a free throw and the ball back. And if it's on a shot, they get 2 free throws and the ball back. That's a pretty severe penalty, right?
Yeah.
Especially in a close game. My point is I want to see the best players on the court, whether this is NBA or NCAA, but we're talking about college basketball at the moment. I want to see them in the overtime. I want to see the best players. I don't want to see the guy who hasn't played all game, but he's forced into duty because two guys fouled out. I don't want to see that guy. I want to see the best athletes who came, right? It's the same thing when somebody gets hurt and you go, oh man, I really wish he could have played the rest of that game, right? It could have made all the difference. Mm-hmm. And it also changes everything where you've got somebody gets 3 fouls early in the second half and has to sit for 8 minutes, you know, where, again, I feel like the punishment of committing a foul is disproportionate to what actually happened in the game. You know, but I don't know. I'm in the minority. Every time I make this argument on Twitter, I get shouted down by the Twitter majority. Anyway, so Matt, Kentucky, maybe you've heard of them.
They have a decent basketball team. They're okay.
They're okay.
They would probably beat your church ball team.
Yes, very likely they'd beat your church ball team. And they would win the BYU intramurals, probably, championship.
They would probably get the championship t-shirt.
And by that, I mean they may pitch a few shutouts.
Do you think somebody would score on them, though, right? I mean, somebody would score some points.
In the early rounds of the BYU intramurals, which I've played in both the top level and the level below that, and actually the level below that with the ward team, that was pathetic. But they would shut somebody up if they tried the entire game. Yeah, somebody would score because when you're up by 60, you don't care anymore, right?
Right.
But the athleticism of this team, I mean, their average margin of victory is like 20-something points. I mean, So Matt, tell me this. Better for college basketball for Kentucky to run the table and win the whole thing and now we've got another one of these very rare undefeated champions. I mean, it's quite rare, right? The NCAA tournament is brutal, right?
Yeah.
All you have to do is make one little mistake against another good team and you're out. Or is it better for college basketball and its mystique if Kentucky falls this weekend or the weekend after?
I think it's better for college basketball if they run the table. I think there's a lot of eyeballs on that final game if you have an undefeated Kentucky team.
I think every game they play is must-see TV, even for casual fans. And I'm not saying people will totally tune out, because I don't. That's not the case. It's the NCAA tournament. It's in a lot of ways, it's the most popular tournament, right? Obviously, the Super Bowl is more watched and things, but you know, it creates excitement in a way that the besides maybe the NFL, no other major playoff does, right? Because you know, you got 68 teams and all that stuff.
Right.
What do you think the chances are that they go through and do that?
I think they've got a pretty good chance. I mean, if you look at their bracket and the teams that they're likely to face, I mean, who in there beats them?
Well, you know, you and I talked about this. I think when we previewed was the whole thing is that they've got a pretty good side. I mean, I don't think West Virginia, Notre Dame, or Wichita State is the team that could beat them. Now, no. Depending on who gets to them in the Final Four, I think Wisconsin is capable, but I wouldn't give them a long shot. UNC is athletic enough that they could give them some trouble. Arizona, again, could give them some trouble. So they're going to likely have a tough game in the Final Four. On the other side, though, I like Gonzaga. I think they're a very good team. I don't think they could beat Kentucky. I don't think Duke can do it. Maybe if everything went right, of course, any of these teams could beat Kentucky, right? Or if everything went wrong for the Wildcats. But I'm with you.
They don't get challenged until the Final Four. I think that's safe.
Yes. This weekend, I think they win handily in both games. But here's the thing. Usually when there's 16 teams left, I'm always going to pick the field, right? I'm really tempted to pick Kentucky, even though it's probably not the smart thing to do because of odds. But if I told you today, your life depends on picking Kentucky or the field, which are you going to pick?
I'm taking Kentucky.
I think I am too. And this may be the first year I've felt that way since I can remember. Now, granted, the last time I think I felt this way was UNLV.
Larry Johnson?
Yeah,
Larry Johnson years?
When they did not, run the table. So, I mean, things can happen, and they will face some...
Did they lose to a Christian Laettner team that year? The year you're talking about?
I'm going to have to go back in the Wayback Machine and figure that out, my friend.
So I watched the other night the I Hate Christian Laettner.
Oh, so did I. Fantastic
and,
television.
That was really good. And I'll tell you what, after watching that, I laugh harder at the commercial, the Resting on Your Laurels commercial.
Yes.
They're like, you understand the irony of this. Yes, I made this. I literally made this hammock out of laurels so I could rest on them. I mean, that's pretty funny.
So let's look at that 1990-91 season. UNLV was the number one ranked team from beginning to end. And so let's see, NCAA tournament. They got beat by, let's see here. No, I want to see the Final Four. Stupid NCAA tournament. I'll figure this out in a minute. Oh,
so UNLV beat Seton Hall.
UNLV lost to Duke in the 90-91. And that team had Laettner, McCaffrey, Hill, Hurley, both Hills. It's a Laettner team.
So I think it was the year before that UNLV had embarrassed Duke.
Yes. Yes.
And then they came back in 1991. and return the favor, essentially, right?
And they did not, if memory serves me right, UNLV did not, they did not lose a game until that game against Duke. That's right. They were 34 straight wins after having won the championship the year before. They were a tremendous team.
They defeated Duke in that championship game in 1990, 103-73. Yes. I mean, it wasn't even close.
No, and I remember those games very clearly. I watched every – now, granted, there wasn't as much college basketball on TV then as there are now. You didn't see as much of the tournament. You had that frustration of, like, cursing at CBS because they would stick with a blowout when they would scroll on the bottom of the screen and what would now be considered poor graphics that another game was close.
It'd be all grainy. You couldn't – yeah.
Oh, man, it's crazy how much better being a sports fan has gotten in the last 20 years. So, Matt, let's move on to BYU, because this is a BYU sports podcast.
Sorry, we got carried away there.
We get carried away all the time. So, Matt, let's move on to Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So, Matt, we pretty much every week end up talking about the men's volleyball team. Mm-hmm. But we didn't last week in our depressed state after the Cougars lost their play-in game.
Womp, womp, womp.
And it's probably okay that we didn't talk about them because, quite frankly, they had a rough month of March so far.
A little bit of a rough patch.
Yes, they lost both of their matches at Stanford, which they were favored and thought that they would win. And then they went to Malibu last weekend and lost both matches, one of them quite close, against Pepperdine. This week, Matt, they've got number 5 UC Irvine coming to the Smith Fieldhouse. You and I were both very optimistic about this team until their last dropping their last 4 matches. And a lot of times not even being that close, unfortunately, in some of those matches. How are you feeling about them against UC Irvine this weekend?
I think they rebound. You know, you come back to the Smith Fieldhouse. You know, it's one of the best, if not the best, environment for men's college volleyball in the country. And a big game, opportunity to bounce back at home against a solid opponent. I think they have it in them to compete at that level, obviously. And a good home stand here is probably exactly what they need.
Yeah, yeah. I think they split. I think they win one and they lose one, which at this point might be as good as they can hope for with as well as they've been playing. I hope you're right. I hope this is a sweep and all of a sudden they're back in contention as a national championship contender. But, you know, this is a young team. We talked about this earlier in the season, and maybe they played over their heads for a while. You know, it'll... This weekend will kind of determine their fate, I guess is what I'm saying. This will kind of show us who they are.
Yeah.
So other Cougars in the news, the SEC will count BYU and Army as P5 non-conference games. Matt, are we in? Are we a P5 team?
I don't know. I mean, if everybody starts calling you a P5 team and counting you as a P5 team, I think you're a P5 team.
Not until they give you the P5 money.
Oh, P5 money.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it is all about the Benjamins, isn't it?
It is all about the Benjamins. Matt, related to that is a announced two-game series with the Mississippi State Bulldogs. The first one will be October 15th, 2016, in Lavelle Edwards Stadium, which that's shaping up to be one of the best home schedules certainly since we've been independent, but maybe ever. Then 2018, there would be a game against Mississippi State. I'm sorry, 2017 in Starkville. So Matt, we look at these schedules. We basically have a P5 schedule, right? All joking aside about the SEC, you look at our conference schedule, it's a P5 schedule, right? Without the conference affiliation is what I'm trying to say. We just happen to play some Pac-12, some SEC, and a smattering of other conferences mixed in.
Yeah, I mean, you've essentially put together a schedule that is the same quality of a schedule you would be playing in any of those conferences.
I mean, look at the beginning of the schedule in 2016. We've absolutely beat the 2015 schedule on the ground. At Arizona, at Utah, UCLA in Provo, neutral, quote-unquote, game against West Virginia at FedEx Field. Don't know what's happening that first Saturday in October yet. Then at Michigan State, home to Mississippi State, at Boise, and then you finish off the year with at Cincinnati, which could be a tough game. I don't know how good they'll be in 2016. Back home for two more games, Southern Miss and Utah State. This isn't going to be, 2016 may not be as tough as 2015, but it's not going to be that far behind. I mean, Michigan State is good. West Virginia is likely to be good. Utah, you know, who knows? And Arizona, I don't know exactly where they'll be, but man, we'll get to this later, Matt, about 10 wins, but I'm a little nervous about these schedules.
Yeah, I mean, these are real schedules. I mean, this is big boy football here, right? So you got to figure out a way to compete here. You got to put teams together that are going to be able to compete in these games.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of which, spring football's going on. And there's a lot of storylines coming out of spring football, Matt. One of them is the offensive line. And I'm going to read you a quote from Mr. Let me see if I can find it. I should have pulled this quote up. I've got it on my Twitter. On the Rise and Shout Twitter account. That's at @BYU_RiseShout, Matt, for people that are scoring at home. So there was talk by some of the players and some of the staff that they were happy with the play of the offensive line so far this spring. Okay, so somebody teased this up to Mr. and I. And this is what he says. Happy? That's a term I don't know much about. To me, that means you think you've arrived. And to answer that, and he's referring to the offensive line, no, we have not arrived.
Yes!
I love Robert and I.
He's the best.
These kind of quotes are just, and I could just, there wasn't video of it. I just read it out of Brandon Gurney's, a friend of the podcast, Brandon Gurney. Story on the Des News yesterday, but I'll tell you what, that's pure Robert and I. That's pure Robert and I. Also on the offense, Matt, they've had some new offensive formations, we've been told by both players and the press. I'd say the first couple years of Go Fast, Go Hard, with a few exceptions, there was a lot of the same plays. Do you think we'll actually see a substantial difference in play calling this year, or do you think that's just them messing around in the spring?
I think we're going to see some difference. I don't know how substantial it will be. All along, there have been references to, you know, they're still kind of installing or putting the system together. So I don't think it's a surprise that they're going to try and take a bigger step in that direction. Hopefully, you've got a healthy Taysom Hill who's got some more game experience under his belt. You know, so I think we are going to see a little bit of difference in the fall.
Yeah, I think it's likely that we will see some difference. I think, you know, when he came in and put in his system, right? It's you do it, but it's not the system everyone's been running since, you know, they were a redshirt freshman, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of the system that people are used to. So I think you're going to see. I think now is a year where they can do some differences. Matt, last year BYU's offense was ranked by Football Outsiders as the 40th best offense in college football. The defense was ranked 60th.
Mm.
I think it's fair to say the offense will probably be a top 30, assuming Taysom Hill stays healthy, a top 30 offense. Can you agree with that?
With a healthy Taysom Hill, yeah.
Yeah, top 30, maybe even top 20 offense. The question,
top 30, I'm a lot more comfortable.
Yeah,
saying.
Top 30, but with the upside, right? Upside of mm-hmm. a top 20. How's that? But how good does the defense have to be for this to be a really good season? I mean, clear, they can't be below 55, right?
No.
Again, do they have to be top 40?
I think they need to be top 30. I think they've got to be top 30.
Because if you've got a top 30 offense and a top 30 defense, you're probably a top 20 team. Now, we may not have the win-loss record of a top 20 team because of how tough this schedule is. But the ratings, if you have that top 30, top 30, you're probably a top 20 team. Which
yeah, most likely.
Is the upside of this team. So, Matt, is the defense likely to be a top 30 defense? Based on what we know today.
Based on what we know today, I'm not prepared to say that.
Me either. I'm just not. I'm not. The defensive backfield has lots of question marks, especially the safety spots, which happen to be really important on a Bronco defense. The linebackers are talented but young. I think now the group I'm most comfortable with is the defensive line, especially with Kafusi back with his hand on the ground. Broncos,
yeah, finally, huh?
Yeah, good to get him back in there. Bronco said today he feels good about the front seven, so I'll take his word for that. But by saying that, he's saying he's not comfortable with the back four. And we don't know if Nacua, how much time he's going to miss with suspension, because I'm assuming he's one of the people that's getting punished. I shouldn't say assuming. He'll get punished for the Miami Beach Brawl, but...
You think?
Yeah, you think? Maybe he might get punished.
You think he's one of those guys?
I think it's possible he might be one of those guys. So Matt, with that in mind, let's peg it this way. Top 30 offense, maybe a top 40 defense. Do you feel comfortable saying top 40?
Maybe.
I feel
like they're probably a top 50 defense.
I think they're going to be better than that. I think they'll be top 40 with Bronco in charge. I think that makes all the difference. I think he's had, if you look at the past, let me go to say, let's pick out a team, okay? Let's pick out 2009, all right? Mm-hmm. Let's go to 2009, which was the last, I think, really, really good season BYU's had. Fair enough?
Okay.
We had the 15th. Oh, actually, we were only top 50 defense that year, according to Football Outsiders. We had the 15th best offense and the 49th best defense. Because I was going to say the talent on that 2009 defense, there were some really good individual players, but I'm not sure it's much better than this talent group. But we are only 49th. Boy, that kind of depresses me. And we went 11-2. Now, granted, we did not have a schedule like we have this year. So, Matt, what does success look like this year then? Is success 9 wins? Are you going to, at the end of the year, go, we won 9 wins? We won 9 games in the regular season, chance to beat somebody in a bowl game, and that's enough?
I mean, 9 games with this schedule?
So that would mean 9-4 going into the bowl game. Right? Or 9-3.
Yeah, 9 games is pretty good with this schedule.
Isn't a 10-win season like a special season?
I don't know if it's a special season.
Oh, yes,
but you feel pretty good. I think you feel really good at 10 wins.
It's a top 5 season in BYU history if you win 10 games. Totally. Because that means you beat several of this group. Nebraska at Nebraska. Boise State, who's going to be good. I don't know how good. UCLA in the Rose Bowl. Michigan at Michigan. And, of course, Missouri. Not at Missouri, but certainly a pretty favorable neutral site game for the Tigers. That means you only dropped 2 of those games. Not to mention you had no hiccup against, say, a good Utah State game in Logan. And again, I don't know if Fresno is going to be any good or Cincinnati, but you don't have any of those hiccup games either.
Right.
I think it's kind of special. I think a 2 or 1 loss season next year is one of the best seasons BYU's ever had because of the schedule. Now, it won't feel as special if you're 10-2 as maybe a 1 loss season does. against a weaker schedule, but it's still more impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
The downside to all of this is even if you have that 10-2, you're not sniffing the college football playoff, and you're not likely sniffing a New Year's Six bowl. You probably have to be a one-loss team, not for the playoff, but for the New Year's Six. Is that fair?
I think that's absolutely fair.
But I think if you lose just one of those, don't you think with this schedule, assuming that these teams are as good as I think they're going to be, you've got a pretty compelling case for a New Year's Six bowl.
And if it's just one loss, it might not matter which team it is.
No, it might not. It may not need to be the worst of the best. You know what I mean? The best of the best is what I'm trying to say. You might slip up against UCLA, and let's turn out UCLA's only a top 40 team, but you lost to them at the Rose Bowl, right?
And it was early in the year. I mean, you might be able to recover from that if that's your only loss.
Yes. Yes. Agreed. But let me tell you what, there's also a pretty good chance that we're looking at 0-4 when BYU hits the first, that first game in October against Connecticut.
That's a very real possibility. I mean, that is not an easy stretch.
No.
You know, the back half of this season is a lot easier than the front half.
Yes, and I felt a lot better about, and again, you lose, you go 8-4, and again, people are just going to, it's going to seem like the same thing over and over again, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen this show before. Now, that being said, I don't think we open up 0-4. I think we open up 2-2, and then it becomes, can you win out the rest of the year and make it a special season, or do you still got one more loss in you? And quite frankly, I think they've got one more loss. I think this is 9-3, but the defense, this all hinges on the defense, right? I mean, the offense we assume will be pretty good. Even if Taysom were to get hurt, I think the offense, the quarterback talent behind him, while young, might be good enough to keep the offense as a above average offense. But if that defense is a barely top 50 defense, we're going to lose three of these games. Is that fair?
Oh, at least.
So we need that defense needs to make a leap to turn this into a special season. Fair?
Absolutely fair.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't see it, Matt. It's spring football, right? We don't really know.
And we've got a lot of guys in spring right now at the linebacker spot that aren't participating. Right. And we've got some other things going on the defense, so it's really hard to get a read on that. I think what you're saying with Bronco coming in and taking over the defense, I do think that is a significant piece of the story.
Yes.
But at the same time, when you pull up and you look at a depth chart right now for the defense, I don't see anything on. I don't see any place on here where, with the exception of maybe Kafusi, every other spot in here, I feel like that could go either way.
Yeah, yeah, and that's really the problem with spring football is you look at it and you go, well, it could go either way, you know, mm-hmm. It could go either way. So Matt. Let's move on to basketball, right? Now Oops. That we have recovered. Have you recovered?
Yeah, I'm all right.
I can't. I'm not sure I have recovered, honestly. But anyway, we're not going to go back there. There's no reason to go back there. So Matt, everyone's now talking about how good we might be next year. Okay? So let me list off some players that will either be joining or rejoining the team and could cause some excitement. Nick Emery, you might have heard of him.
Yep.
Won 3 state titles and might be the next big scoring machine coming off a mission. Nate Austin is likely to return and get a medical redshirt. I don't know if that's happened yet. Utah State transfer Kyle Davis sat out last year. UNLV transfer Jamal Ates, who ended up sitting out this year because of injury. So those are 3 large post players, 2 of them, Kyle Davis and Ates, who actually you might run plays for. which besides a few random plays run for Bronson Cafusi, didn't do much of that this year. And I think eights will be quite good. Then you've got freshman forwards Braden Shaw and Jacob Hartsock. I've heard that name before. They're coming back from missions. Corbin Cafusi, of course, will be back. Ryan Andrus, Dalton Nixon, and Luke Worthington are leaving on missions, which I think I've said this before. It's a good thing for Worthington because I don't think he would have. I don't think he would have played at all next year.
This may allow for a graceful exit.
Yes, I think it may. So anyway, but everyone's excited about, of course, Emery, the other people on the outside, Collinsworth back, Fisher's back. Corey Calvert returns from an LDS mission, and then you've got Jake Toulson, who did okay, Frank Bartley, and then Jordan Chapman as well on the perimeter. Matt, is this team loaded?
Yes, it is. And you know what? I want to say, well, you know, we don't know. These guys are young. They don't have all this experience yet. But in today's world of college basketball, it doesn't get better than this. You don't keep guys for 4 years anymore.
No.
You know, nobody does. This is the definition of loaded in college basketball. I mean, that might be a little bit of hyperbole, right? Because there's going to be a lot of new faces, people come back from injury and those types of things. But at what point does it get better than that for BYU? Is it the year after?
So I think there'll be growing pains. Like you pointed out, some of these guys coming back off missions, some of them, you know. But you've got two guys in the post who were with the program this year but didn't play, right? So they're mm-hmm. not coming back, right? These are guys, you know, Ates is coming off an injury, sure, but these are guys that were in the program. And then you've got Nick Emery, who everyone assumes will be, you know, the next great scorer at BYU. And, of course, he has to prove that on the court. But let me put it this way. Even if Emery isn't as good as promised, or he, unlike Tyler Haas and some others, he has that, you know, that post-mission, like, in December, January, like hits the wall that a lot of guys have had in the past. Even if that happens, they are deep enough, Matt, that they're going to be a better team, don't you think, than this year's team?
I'm very excited about about next year's team.
I mean, I feel pretty confident now saying I think that last season I did not think they could contend for the WCC title. Gonzaga was too good and we were too shallow, and that proved to be true. It was actually worse than I thought at the beginning of the year when we predicted the records at the end. But this year, in a both Gonzaga losing a little bit and us gaining a lot, I think we're right there with them in the offseason as favorites for the WCC title. How confident I feel. Now, again, some of these guys are not going to pan out, right? Some of these guys will not be as good as we think they're going to be. Some of these guys will be better than we think they're going to be. And there's going to be somebody we're not talking about today that ends up making, maybe it's Toulson, or somebody makes a leap like Winder did this last year, who maybe you didn't think would make the leap. And maybe it's Bartley, that makes that leap. I don't know. But that, man, I feel good about the interior though.
Oh yeah. Finally. Right. I mean,
if Cafusi's like your fifth best, post player, I think we're in good shape. Now, he may not be. He may be better than that, and some of these guys may, especially the guys coming off their missions, may take a while to get back into the lineup.
I feel like Cafusi still has a lot of upside, and I know there aren't a lot of people in that camp, but I think we're still just scratching the surface on Cafusi.
Yes, agreed. And the good thing is he won't have to be exposed next year like he was early this year, because that's there'll be more guys. And he cannot have to worry about being the big guy. He can be one of the big guys. So, Matt, who leads the team in scoring next year? Pick
Emery.
One name.
Emery.
You're picking Emery.
I'm not even going to hesitate.
I am going to pick someone else.
Who are you going to pick?
I'm going to pick a certain point guard who's Mr. Triple-Double, Kyle Collinsworth.
Oh, it's a safe pick.
I think I think, look at his difference between his free throw shooting between the 2 years, right? He went from a pretty abysmal for a perimeter guy free throw shooter to a pretty solid one. I mean, he's not Tyler Hawes, but he became a pretty good free throw shooter. What happens when he can hit 35% of his threes?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this in a prior podcast. That makes him a pro player, I think. I think he had a shot in the pros even without that skill. But that makes him a pro player for sure. I think this year he leads the team. I think his assists and rebounds go down for obvious reasons on the rebounding. He won't have to carry as much of that load. And on assists, I think there are some other good playmakers who will be able to run the offense through them, including Emery and Jordan Chapman and others. Who leads the team in rebounding? I mean, this year it was Collinsworth.
I think it's Ates.
I'd say Ates or Davis. That would be my pick, would be one of those big guys. I wouldn't be shocked if it was Nate Austin, but I don't think so. I don't think he'll play enough minutes to lead the team in rebounding. And I am pretty confident to say it's not going to be Collinsworth again.
No, because like you said a minute ago, it's not going to have to be.
No, he doesn't have to go in there and basically, he was the best rebounder. Well, he's probably the best rebounder even with a healthy Nate Austin. He's probably still the best pure rebounder on that team this past year, even if everyone's healthy. But next year, he may not be, and he won't have to be. He won't have to be. Matt, who's one player that will be on the roster next year that maybe we haven't talked a lot about who you think will make a big impact, not named Collinsworth, Ates, Davis, or Emery?
Can I say Chase Fisher?
You can. I didn't put him on the list.
I think that's the guy I would pick there.
Yeah. You think he's going to be better than last year, or do you think he'll be the same, but that's still... will be a great fit for us.
I think he's going to be better. I think we saw some real flashes where he would shine in some moments or in some games or in a half or something. And I think we're going to see that more consistently next year as he's more comfortable in the program. And also with some of the shuffling around that's going to happen, I think he's going to have more opportunity.
I think that's a good pick. I was going to pick Jordan Chapman.
Yeah,
I think he will play a major role. And what I like about, I kind of felt like whenever Collinsworth was out, it's nothing against Holford or Bartley. Well, maybe it's something against Bartley. There wasn't really a point guard. And I think there's a few guys, including Chapman, that can run the offense in Collinsworth's absence where it won't become like a one-trick pony when he's out, right? At that point, if Hawes was still on the floor, you had to find him. There wasn't really any consistent offense outside of that when Collinsworth was out. I think now Collinsworth leaves, it will still be a downgrade. I don't think any of these guys will be as good as Collinsworth is right now. But I think somebody like Jordan Chapman steps up and gives some really quality minutes and runs the show when Collinsworth is getting a breather.
Yeah. I think that's a good pick.
So does this make you feel any better a week later that, the next few years, it looks like the team's loaded? I mean...
Well, it's the classic, like, there's always next year, right? So the day after your season ends, the next season begins, and right now, we're undefeated next year.
Right. You know? We're Kentucky! So
it's easy to be optimistic and excited about it.
We're going all the way!
There are some legitimate reasons here for us to be excited about next season.
But when BYU lost last year and, Collinsworth got hurt and, we had high hopes, he gets hurt, still make the tournament, but it doesn't work out the way we'd hoped. We weren't talking this optimistically a year ago. Mika was leaving. Yeah, we were getting some additions, but I think we thought this was a team that had a chance to make the tournament, which they did, but we weren't saying this was a team that had a chance to be special, and we're saying this team has a chance to be special. So I feel like it's different. It's not just, I mean, like you said, a lot of this is that off-season glow, but I think it's more than that.
Did you just use the phrase off-season glow?
Yeah, is that, you had a problem with that phrase?
No, I just want, no, I think
it's great. I just made it up on the spot.
It's a great phrase. Like, I think you should use it all the time.
No, you don't. You think it's ridiculous. And that's fair. I say ridiculous things all the time. I mean, heck, we've just been going on for 44 minutes of ridiculousness.
That's what we do.
That's what this podcast is. Well, Matt, we will be back next week to wrap up spring football with a guest. Not sure who yet, but I'm sure they'll be awesome, as all our guests are. We'll be back next week. Tweet at us at @BYU_RiseShout. You can always email Matt@LoyalCougars.com or me, Adam@LoyalCougars.com. Anything you'd like to say before we sign off?
I'm just excited about BYU basketball running the table between now and when the season starts.
Yes, yes. I don't think they will lose a game in that time frame. That was a bold prediction, Matt. Very bold. There you go. Well, thanks for listening, downloading. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!